Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to What's the Res, an ongoing conversation about the current resolutions in the world of high school debate. My name is Josh Herring. I'm a humanities instructor and debate coach at Thales Academy in Rollsville, North Carolina. Today, my guest on What's the Res is Hannah Frankman, community manager at Praxis. You can check out their website at discoverpraxis.com. Here at Thales in North Carolina, we are getting ready for the Luddy Debate League tournament, and our new resolution is something our students are pretty excited about. It reads, "Resolved, the benefits of obtaining a bachelor's degree outweigh the cost to students and their families." My guest this episode, Hannah Frankman, is an expert on the topic of whether or not people should go into the workforce or to colleges, and I'm very excited that she can lend us her expertise on this show. Hannah, welcome to What's the Res. I'm so excited that you could join us today.
I am very excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, help our listeners know a little bit about Praxis and what you do. I'm familiar with Praxis by way of Chuck Grimmett, and I've corresponded a couple times with Isaac Morehouse, but I don't know that our listeners are very familiar with Praxis. So what is Praxis and what do y'all do?
So Praxis is a business apprenticeship program. Specifically, we're a startup apprenticeship program. So we're a year-long program for people who want to launch their careers, and we're credential agnostic. So we accept everyone from college graduates to high school dropouts. We don't care about your educational background. We care about your ability and your desire to work, your ability and desire to learn, and your willingness to learn what it takes to create value on the job market. So the program's divided into two parts. We have a six-month educational boot camp, which is the first half of the program. It's all online. It's all digital. And we're teaching our participants the skills that they need to be successful in an entry-level job in the startup world. And then at the halfway point of the program, we have businesses that we're partnered with all across the country that are hiring entry-level talent. And we're connecting our participants after they've graduated that boot camp with different companies in our network, and they're interviewing for different positions. And once they've landed an opportunity, they go and work in a full-time paid apprenticeship for 6 months. So they're getting paid to learn on the job with the intent of being brought on in a full-time role at the end of that 6 months. So it's an apprenticeship, not an internship. It's not a finite thing where you're just getting something to slap on your resume. You're learning how to do sales, or you're learning how to do marketing. And the intention for both parties is for you to come on as a full-time salaried employee at the end.
How interesting. I know certainly my students are convinced that a college degree is the road to a successful job. They don't really know what they want to do. They just know you have to get into a good school and you have to get a degree, preferably in something related to technology, computer science, and maybe engineering. And then you're guaranteed to walk into a $100,000, $75,000, $150,000 career, and life is going to be great. Are you telling me that that's not the case, or the way it really works in the real world?
I would strongly disagree with both halves of those statements, that A, you need a college degree to be successful, and B, that a college degree guarantees your ability to walk into a job and be super successful as soon as you graduate. And I have a lot of empirical evidence to back that up, too, with all the people that I've spent the past few years working with, and that all the Praxis graduates that have gone through our program.
Well, help us with some of that empirical data. Does that, how many, I mean, does I know there are lots of people in colleges planning to head into the workforce. Is it hard to find a job on the other side of college? Certainly colleges claim to have a pretty high success rates placing people in fields. What's the other side of the story?
Yeah, so I'm going to give you some general statistical points, and then I'm kind of going to break that down and explain some of the logic behind why these points exist. So first of all, 43% of college graduates are underemployed, and that means they have a job, but that job is not equal to their skill level and their technical credentialed employment level. A lot of college graduates graduate from school and aren't able to get a job in the field that they studied for. They're not even able to get a job that requires having an undergraduate degree. You hear this all the time, people talking about their son or their daughter who went to college and is now working at a restaurant or working at Starbucks or working in retail and trying to make ends meet while they're trying to find a better job. This is really, really common. Just because you have a college degree does not mean that you're going to move into a job that has a high paying salary or requires a degree. On top of that, and I've seen different numbers for this one, the number that I usually throw out is 33%, but I've seen it as high as 41%. But we'll say 33% of students default on their loans too. College is really expensive and it's really hard to pay off. So there's a lot of student loan debt.
Did you say 33% was the low end of that number?
Yes, the average student debt in the U.S. is $37,000 per student, but a lot of households have well over $100,000 in student debt, and it takes a really long time to pay off. So the evidence is definitely there that, yes, traditionally going to school equated to having a high-paying job, and it equated to being successful in the workforce, but college has also become more and more common. And a degree doesn't necessarily mean as much as it once did. If a very small percentage of the population is going to college, that probably is going to equate to those people going on and filling the jobs that require a degree, but it doesn't mean as much anymore, and it doesn't mean as much for employers either. And here's the real secret that people don't talk about, is that, first of all, college degrees don't really prepare you for work. A college degree is a purely theoretical endeavor. It's learning knowledge and information, which is important, but you're not getting any real world experience unless you're doing internships. And even that's limited in scope. And you're not gaining the hard and soft skills that you're actually going to use in the day-to-day on a job. So there's a gap between where you are at when you're coming out of college and where you need to be when you're working in that entry-level position, which is another reason why it's really hard for people to land work sometimes coming out of college. And the other half of this equation is employers don't actually care whether or not you have a degree. They care about your ability to work, and a degree is a proxy for that. It's a signal that employers use to kind of weed out the people who can and cannot stick to things, who do and do not have a college level, you know, communication skills, writing skills, things like that. But at the end of the day, they don't actually care about the degree unless you're working in a role that's highly technical and legally requires a degree. An employer cares about your ability to create value. It's an economic system. They are looking for people who are going to be valuable to the company and bring in more value than the company is expending on them. And a college degree doesn't actually have anything to do with that.
So I have a good friend who works as an engineer here in North Carolina, and he was telling me recently about his company. He legally had to have a certain certification, and because he had that certification that was, I think, was part of his master's work or right after that, he was able to help the company out with that particular project. But you're describing lots of other fields that simply don't require that kind of specialization.
Precisely. There are lots of fields that have systems in place that legally require college degrees, and none of the arguments that I'm going to make are going to apply to that because that's a different game. But for anything that doesn't legally require a degree, there are much more effective ways to break into the workforce.
Now, could you tell us a little bit more about what, in your experience as working with Praxis, what have you seen that employers are really looking for? And if a student is going to forego that kind of, I think you called it a proxy a moment ago, of what Brian Kaplan calls kind of a price signal of the degree, what are some other ways that people can communicate those things about work ethic and research skills and communication? How else can people communicate those ideas to potential employers?
Evidence, proof of their ability to do those things. And that's a lot of what our Praxis curriculum is built on. One of the most important things that our participants learn about and build over the course of their year-long Praxis experience is a portfolio. They're building out, they're doing projects where they're actually showcasing these skills, and they're showing an employer, hey, I spent a month running a bunch of Facebook ads. Here is my actual tangible capacity to do marketing work. If you go and you look at this project, you see exactly what I would be able to do on day one if you hired me into your company. And that speaks far more than any theoretical understanding that one might have about marketing. You can understand the theory of marketing and have no idea how to actually drive results and numbers for a company on day one coming into the job. Having that tangible knowledge is far more important. And your ability to learn and demonstrating your process in learning is also very important, especially as an entry-level employee. You know, there's a lot that you don't know, and that's okay. People understand that as an entry-level employee. They don't necessarily expect you to be an expert, but they do want to see that you're going to be able to tackle the things that you don't know how to do and learn how to do them on the job. So showing your ability to learn, your process of learning, is also really important. It's equally as important as showing your process of doing the work itself. We call it learning out loud, and we emphasize that really heavily throughout our Praxis curriculum too. We have our participants documenting their process, not only of the steps that they're completing as they're showing their ability to do specific things, but also their process of learning how to do those things in the first place.
Now, you've mentioned marketing. You've mentioned a couple other sort of knowledge-based fields. Does Praxis end up placing students in any kind of skilled labor positions as well?
So our specialty, and this is a generalization, are non-technical roles at tech startups. So sales, marketing, operations, and customer success, anything that, you know, we don't specialize in the programming side of things. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of coding boot camps that already do that. We've had people come through the program who have some technical background and use the program to help them launch their tech careers. But we don't specialize in that. We specialize in the non-technical roles.
Okay. Well, let me toss a different question your way. Now, I know it seems besides the degree, besides the knowledge that people might gain in a college, four-year college degree, it seems like one of the main things that colleges provide is a sort of social capital, kind of an incubator for bringing theoretically talented, intelligent, reasonably affluent people all together. I was fascinated last week to look at just how many interesting startups have come out of Stanford University. Instagram, Snapchat are just two that I at least recognize those names. There were Coursera as a third. So are there ways for people to gain the same kind of social capital and mobility without going to college? If they go to Praxis, does Praxis help them replace some of those other things, that some more intangible benefits that college does provide?
Absolutely. So college is, it's a central hub and a central location for all of these things, but it by no means has a corner on the market. Historically, that's how colleges and universities initially began. They were central hubs for information and knowledge and learning. And as information has become much easier to access, the college model has become more and more obsolete. And that's really true for everything that college offers, not just the information and the training side of things. So there are lots and lots of other places where people of a college age, or not, but people who are launching their careers can access those same types of connections and resources. That's what Praxis offers too. One of our biggest assets is also our community. Everyone who is doing our program is actively launching their careers. A lot of them want to start their own businesses someday or be key players in growing companies. A lot of them are starting their own side projects. All of the companies that are in our business partner network who are hiring Praxis talent, they're all actively working on and building really cool things. And they all have a broad network as well of people who are building things, people who are investing in other people's businesses and projects, people who are looking to take on talent and train them and mentor them. And there are a lot of other places to tap into that as well. Praxis also by no means has a corner on the market, even though we focus very heavily on curating those resources and those network connections for our participants. There are lots of other entrepreneurship groups out there. There are lots of social networks. And, you know, people like helping other people, especially people who are established in their careers and see young people who are just starting out, who have similar interests as they did when they were starting out. And they're always very happy to help you and support you as well. And once you start tapping into a network and building a network, it's a domino effect, and it exponentially grows because every person you meet knows five more people that you should meet too. So even though colleges are a very logical hub for that sort of thing, they're by no means the only option for building out a network.
Well, that makes sense. So there's now other ways besides college to connect with like-minded people who are interested in growth and business success. Now help us with some of the specifics about how big is the Praxis network? I mean, how long has Praxis been around? How many graduates have gone through there? Are there any names that people might recognize who you would say these are successful Praxis folks who really exemplify the success of this model?
That's a great question. So we started our first class in 2014. We ran one class that year. There were six people. So we've grown a lot since then. I actually don't know the exact precise number of graduates because we have new classes starting every month and we have people graduating every month. We're well over 200 graduates now. And we have roughly 10 participants starting every month on average. We've had classes as big as 20 start last year. So we've been growing quite a bit over the past few years since we started out in 2014. In terms of alumni who would be notable, I mean, all of our graduates are doing very cool and interesting things. We had a graduate very recently, in the past week or so, create a video for Billboard's Musicians of the Year, like Music Awards. He did some graphic and video design for the video that they released where they announced the top artists for, I think it was the top male and the top female artists, artist nominees for 2019, or 2018, I'm sorry. So, you know, he knew he wanted to be a creative long-term, but he did the program, did a media and marketing internship or apprenticeship at a company based in New York City, stayed on a few months after his apprenticeship until he was able to get enough freelance work to launch his career. And now he's really successful. He did a shoot last year behind the scenes for a fashion show as Gentleman's Quarterly. So he's garnered a lot of success in his videography career. We have a participant who dropped out of CMU halfway through his sophomore year to work for a data analytics company based in Pittsburgh. He worked there for about a year and a half after he went through our program and then landed a job with the Tampa Bay Rays, where he's currently running numbers and statistics to help them determine which players they should draft in the MLB draft in coming up in a few months, or a few weeks rather. So we have a number of participants also who've built very successful careers within the startup space. The names of the people they're working with are going to be a little more obscure if you're not super familiar with the startup world, but we have a large number of participants who've been very successful in careers in sales, careers in marketing. We have a participant who works for a tech company that's based in Atlanta, Georgia, who had almost no sales experience coming into his apprenticeship in the fall of 2016. He moved down to Atlanta in November. Went from having no idea how to do sales to outperforming his entire sales team combined by the end of his apprenticeship. He was promoted to account executive, which is the position where people are actually closing deals for the company, and then was promoted again to go back in and retrain and manage his old sales team about a year and a half after he started at this company. So depending on the direction that people are interested in moving, the types of careers that they're interested in building, there are a lot of different definitions of success. But we've seen our alumni be very successful in whatever trajectory they choose to follow after the program.
Now, that is really interesting. I think that'll help the debaters, who theoretically are our audience for this show. We'll help them think through really some counter narratives to the dominant story that seems to really be in the air that we breathe a lot of times. Now, the people that you're describing, I'm assuming based on the chronology that they are somewhere between ages 19, 20, 21, 22, and already seem to have a pretty, those all sounded like very legitimate professional jobs or businesses and some really interesting career possibilities over the years. Now, help our listeners think through. They certainly could make a choice to go to college, but is there an opportunity cost with those 4 years that they're spending in the classroom learning, hopefully all kinds of helpful, interesting, relevant things, but is there something that they're missing out on? Is there an opportunity cost to go in the traditional route of a college education?
Yeah, I would say that there are two very strong opportunity costs. The first one's just time. Time is a limited commodity, and the more of it you maximize, the better off you're going to be. If you follow the traditional college routes, you take 4 years to graduate. At 22 years old, you're just breaking into that job market and you're just going through the process. You have your brand new degree in hand and you are starting that process of figuring out how to impress employers and how to land that first internship or that first entry-level job. What if at age 22, you had 4 years of working experience under your belt and you were already in a mid-level management position at a fast-growing tech startup in a major city in the U.S. You already had years of experience. You had employees you were training. You had projects in your portfolio that you could point to and say, I managed this. I created value in this way. Just think about how far accelerated their career already is. And financially, they're far ahead as well. Instead of spending $50,000 or $60,000 or more a year for the past 4 years, they've been making that instead. They have capital in the bank. They have assets that they've been able to purchase. They're financially stable and established as well, instead of just having to start the process of thinking about how they're going to budget in tuition payments for the next 10 plus years. There's also an opportunity cost in terms of being able to capitalize on being young and not having much risk. If you don't have debt, you're very young, you're just starting out, you don't have a lot of financial responsibilities yet, you have a huge asset of being able to be incredibly flexible. You can take an opportunity that as a 22-year-old, 23-year-old college graduate with financial responsibilities would look like a big risk. You can take a job that doesn't pay as much as you'd like to be making because you're entirely free with how you're using your finances. And that allows you to take some jumps and take some risks that you maybe couldn't take otherwise, but that allow you to step into positions that have a lot of potential for growth. They allow you to step into a position where you're working at a really early stage startup that maybe doesn't have a lot of capital to pay you very much, but you're in on the ground floor and you're helping to build something that in the future will pay dividends. And people like helping people that are young too. If you're 18 or 19 years old and you're going into a company and you're saying, hey, just give me whatever you have that you can give me, like just put me to work anywhere you need me. People like that and people see that and they notice that hunger to learn and that desire to work and they want to help that. So you're able to leverage that, both that financial freedom and your youth, to springboard you into some really incredible opportunities.
Well, those are some really helpful ways to help us think about that. I love that idea of really getting that 4-year head start and kind of comparing where could you be? It's been that's really an interesting idea. I'm kind of fascinated with tracking the way in which college prices have risen over the last few years. And it seems to me that, and I'm a Hillsdale College graduate and a seminary graduate, and I'm currently a doctoral student at Faulkner University. I'm a fan of the general academy as a whole when it's done right. But it does seem to me that the product that is offered, or the service that's offered in the granting of a degree and how whatever educational route to that degree is taken, the end result is the same. There's this degree, and theoretically, you go off and you enter into a career after that degree, or you go off to a new level of education that's somehow unlocked by your degree. But if the good that's received has remained the same, the cost has risen. So with all of that as background, have colleges changed in such a way that their value no longer matches their cost?
So I'm going to make a really radical argument. I would say that college has been devaluing at the same rate as the price is going up. Maybe not the same rate, but at the same time. And here's what I mean by that. So a lot of professors, and this is a generalization, this is definitely not true across the board, but a lot of professors who are teaching specific skills for specific fields and specific career tracks, they potentially haven't worked in that field at all. If they have, it's been some time since they've been working there. They've been spending time in academia teaching people. And the world, in terms of, you know, the way that businesses run, the software that they use, the strategies that they're using, the things that you have to know and understand in order to be effective and valuable in a company, those are changing all of the time. Companies are always implementing new software. People are always implementing new strategies. What worked for a marketer 2 years ago probably doesn't work now. I hear the Praxis marketing team talk about this all the time, how, you know, Facebook used to be the place to go to target people, and now it's far less, it became far less effective than email campaigns. And now the landscape's changing again, and nobody really knows what the new most valuable thing is going to be. Mm. But people do know the software and the tools that are being used on a day-to-day basis within a company, if you're in the working world and you're practically applying these things. And colleges aren't even teaching that. There is a statistic for this, and I don't know it off of the top of my head. And I wish I did, because it would be valuable for this too. But, you know, there have been studies done on the relevance of especially technical skills that mm-hmm. colleges are and are not teaching. And it's surprisingly low. There's a lot that they aren't covering because, you know, why build a whole curriculum if it's all going to be different next year? So it's not necessarily even as valuable as it may have once been or as it might be for people, especially if they're going into the business world and they're going into more technical roles mm-hmm. where they're going to need to have capacities and skills using tools to be valuable to a company at all.
I think in my field of education, and particularly my school, we've recently had one of those very quick changes in technology platforms. We used to use a program called RenWeb to record all of our grades, and it was our communication platform to parents and all kinds of other services. But at the beginning of this school year, we had a very quick about face where our network of schools is currently 8 campuses in North Carolina. And all 8 of those campuses abruptly changed over to the Canvas platform. And it's a learning management system that can do a lot more things. But there was a pretty steep learning curve. And that was something that really came out as a matter of about 4 weeks. We had multiple trainings that were done by our in-house technology professionals. And then suddenly, as teachers, we were expected to use the new platform. And it was a bit abrupt. But I just think it's very interesting that that's not anything that any of our new hires who have just finished an education program, none of their courses included how to use Canvas, because Canvas is brand new. It's the current hot program for schools to use. I also find it very interesting that your argument was focusing on a particular side of college education, that really you've been speaking to the kind of business education and technical skills education. Would you see there being a different value in someone who goes to college for a traditional liberal arts kind of study, and that's more about self-formation through study than about acquiring particular skills? Is that a different kind of discussion than what we've been having?
Possibly. It depends. And this is true for everyone when they're making a decision about what makes the most sense for them. You know, what are your goals? What do you want to accomplish? A lot of the focus in the work that I do is, you know, the goal that is being chased and, you know, what we're trying to create is the start of a career, the launching of a professional trajectory. And in that, yes, having general knowledge, becoming smarter, developing yourself, that's very important, but that's also not exclusive to college. You can read books and engage in interesting conversations and listen to interviews and lectures and podcasts without going to school. You can be focused on that on top of building your career. But if the end goal is to start a career, then technically speaking, a liberal arts degree is incredibly impractical because it equips you with nothing that makes you valuable on the market. An employer, in a human sense, from a human standpoint, might care a lot about your personal development and your interest in philosophy and literature, but, you know, they may want to talk to you for hours about that on their own time, but your ability to structure a rational argument in a conversation, or your ability to talk about medieval classics, does nothing that's valuable to a company. It gives you no edge in creating results in the working world. You know, a company hires you, they're paying you money to create value for them. And you need to return and then some the value that they are putting, you know, expending on you for you to be a worthwhile investment and for you to keep a job. So a liberal arts degree is not equipping you to do that.
Oh, Hannah, thank you for such a great answer. I apologize for a curveball question. I know that was not on our original list of questions for this interview. As a Hillsdale grad, I might be disowned by the Hillsdale community, at least, if I didn't make a plug for the distinction between a liberal arts education and a research or skills-based education. And I think you addressed that very effectively, that this all really does seem to come down to goals and really what are you looking for? And
absolutely.
If you're looking for that career and say, look, 10 years from now, I want to be able to live at this level and what does it take to get there? College may not be part of that equation. But if you're looking for something else, maybe college makes a lot more sense. But certainly, it seems like what you're arguing is that really college is certainly not necessary for everyone. And college actually can really be a hindrance to accomplishing a lot of people's goals then.
Exactly. I do not pretend to know what is the best choice for any individual. And I think that there are as many different options for building a life as there are individuals in the world. So there's no one right answer. But yeah, you sum that up very well in that it does boil down to your goals. And I think, you know, in our work at Praxis, the assumption that we feel like we're trying to break people free of is just the blatant assumption that if you want to be successful, you need to go to college, because it's not that black and white. Yes, there can be a lot of benefits to going to school. And for some people, it is the option that's most in alignment with their goals, but it is by no means necessary. And depending on what your goals are, there are often much more efficient and much more effective ways of pursuing those goals than taking the traditional four-year college route.
Well, that traditional four-year college route certainly can be good in a lot of places, but there is no denying that there is substantial cost to the student and to the families of those who make the choice to go that traditional route. Now, it seems like a lot of what your work is involved with is trying to push back against this sort of narrative that I think we all believe to some extent, just by nature of being alive in 2019 and being after the GI Bill and after the baby boomer generation decided that all of their children just should go to college. There seems, in my circles at least, to be a little bit of a stigma against people who decide, you know what? I am a smart, intelligent person. I did take those AP classes. I did get the SAT score that could get me into NC State or UNC Chapel Hill or Davidson College, at least for our North Carolina context, because there's something strange about North Carolina people. They don't like to leave North Carolina. They love it here. So most of them stay in state. I'm from Virginia originally, so that always stuck out to me. But anyway, the point I was trying to get at is that there seems to be this stigma. It's not that. I'm not talking about folks who really don't have an option to get into college easily, but the folks who could, but decide, no, actually, I want to work at Chick-fil-A, and I've been there for 2 years in high school, and I can see myself as a manager at Chick-fil-A, and eventually buying my own franchise and opening my own Chick-fil-A years from now. Now, are there ways that people can kind of push back against this narrative? Are there ways we can really kind of recover a sort of respect for the people who decide not to go to college?
So a couple of answers to this question again. First and foremost, the stigma is temporary. And I'm going to make this really personal for a second, and I'm going to kind of share my story because I don't have a college education. I never went to school, and I was always on a college track. Everyone assumed, including me, I assumed I was going to school. I was a very academically inclined student. I was the type of person who just automatically goes directly from high school to college. And I decided not to go because I decided it didn't make sense to me. I didn't want the financial burden. I didn't particularly want to pursue anything that required a college degree. I had interests in places that traditionally you need to have a college degree to break into, but I was able to creatively move into the education world and do things that don't require a credential. And I felt a lot of stigma and a lot of flack coming out of high school and not taking the traditional route. And that went away over time. It lasted a couple of years. People always wanted to know what I was doing. They wanted to know why on earth I was doing what I was doing once I explained it to them. But after a time, people stop caring about where you went to school because it's no longer immediately relevant. They want to know what you're doing now. And college kind of fades in the rearview mirror. It moves farther and farther away. And people stop caring. And that's true on the market, too. Hmm. People, you know, employers, after you have that entry-level job, after you have maybe a couple of them tops, employers don't care anymore about your college education. They care about the results that you created at your last job, and they look at that as an indicator of your ability to create results should they hire you onto their company. So in both a social and a professional sense, in most cases, it's not always true. Again, it depends on the individual, but in a lot of cases, that stigma is short-lived. In terms of, you know, generally, like more general social stigma around people who don't go to college, I think that's going to change. College is ridiculously expensive. It's becoming more and more unaffordable for students. And, you know, I mentioned the rates of people defaulting on their loans, and that number of people, percentage of people who are underemployed keeps going up. So I think that more and more people are going to choose to not go to college, and more alternatives such as Praxis are going to emerge on the market because it's a need. And that's where people, that's what drives innovation. People see a problem, they see a need that other people are experiencing, and they start to come up with creative solutions. How can we do this faster? How can we do this better? That's how we got ride sharing to, you know, replace the traditional taxi industry. How can we do this cheaper and better? How can people get rides from point A to point B in an effective and efficient and affordable way? The same thing will happen with college. And I think over time, that stigma will die as people see more and more people who, you know, are successful without a degree, and it stops being this dichotomy of you're either Steve Jobs or you're 30 years old and living with your parents and don't have a job, and like those are the two options if you don't go to school. I think that will change.
Well, that's certainly, I think you're onto something with that idea of the stigma changing and the price simply not being sustainable. I've recently started following a couple of Harvard business professors who have, apparently, I did not know this till I found one of their recent restatements of the argument, but for the last 15 years, these professors have been predicting the collapse of the current collegiate world to the extent of they're calling between 40% and 75% of current colleges will close their doors. Harvard's endowment isn't going anywhere. Harvard's not going to close down their doors. But in the past month, four different small liberal arts colleges in New England have closed their doors because people simply no longer value what these colleges have offered at that price point. And the way these colleges are structured, they simply can't survive without people paying for their services at that price point, which in one sense makes me very sad because I would love to see more good liberal arts colleges spread. But on the other hand, I think you're absolutely right that we're starting to see something new happening. And these same professors argue that the advent of online education and online connectivity is as big of a change for the educational landscape as Gutenberg's printing press was 500 years ago, and that really online learning makes it much more difficult for colleges to articulate just why you need to pay them to come to them for the information that you can find in a lot of other ways. So I have hopes that at least a lot of colleges will begin trying to both restructure and lower their price so that those who really would benefit from a college education can afford it, but also that such colleges will really recover a much more robust vision of why it's necessary, why it's actually helpful to gather together and learn together in community. But short of that, we may very well see. I wonder, I don't know what an Uber or Lyft version of college would look like, but that certainly would be interesting if you could manage a ride-sharing version of college. Maybe kind of float from campus to campus and pick up necessary classes in between. I don't know. But that's certainly a very interesting set of ideas you just gave us.
It's a market that there is huge potential in the next 5 years, I would say, for a lot of people to be breaking into and doing really interesting things. You know, at Praxis, we were kind of on that front cusp of people who were starting to address this problem. And in the 5-6 years that we've been in business, we've seen so many more players emerge in the marketplace and more all of the time. And I don't know if there is one right answer either. I think there will be a large number of solutions solving various pieces of this problem. And I do think that there's a lot of room too for those good components of a college education and a college experience to continue and to still be offered and available, but in a way that's much more sustainable. But I agree completely with your point about the internet being as impactful as the invention of the printing press. There's a phenomenal essay series called Breaking Smart by a man named Venkatesh Rao. And it's based on a quote by Marc Andreessen. And he said that software is eating the world. And the essay series is basically talking about how technology is as big of an invention in terms of implications as written language and money, in that it infuses everything and it changes the entire landscape of how we interact. And I really think college is going to be, or education in general, is going to be one of the first things to see a really major impact from technology. And I think it already has, and we're just only starting to catch up. I think that in a lot of ways, the college system is already obsolete. It's done in its original iteration, its original form. And we're only just starting to catch up with that fact.
Well, I'm part of a high school that is trying to at least look at the high school version of that technological innovation, where Thales prides themselves on trying to incorporate technology in every classroom. We were one of the first private schools in North Carolina to have a one-to-one iPad integration, and I've now been there for 6 years, and I found it kind of fascinating. I will confess to at least, I don't think I've ever been even close to being a Luddite, but I do have a slight lean in that direction. I tend to think, oh my goodness, technology can provide more distractions than it can help. And I think there's still something about the feel of an actual hardback book in my hand that an e-reader will just never replace. But
I agree.
It's been a very interesting six-year journey to try and figure out how actually can technology take education into a new direction, and how can it facilitate learning in new ways, and how do we structure that in such a way that really technology, and in my opinion at least, is not necessarily about replacing the traditional knowledge that students have always studied, but it rather is about opening up access to that traditional knowledge and helping students use it and apply it and understand it in relevant ways to the way they live today. It becomes really important for my students to, I still want them to understand the ideas that Sophocles brings up in Oedipus Rex, but they now have each of them now have cameras on their iPads, which mean they can go out and film they can make a movie of that, and they can drop it into apps, and they can do all kinds of things I can't even outline the total possibilities of, because they've now got this infinite amount of creativity that can come in and really spice up this, and they're still learning the same ideas, but they're taking it and using it in far different ways than I could ever imagine. I just think it's very interesting to kind of see what's going to happen with the collegiate landscape. We're about running up to time for this episode, but I do want to ask you one last question. We have assuming our audience is mostly middle schoolers and high school students, and maybe the odd debate coach or two who picks up on my Facebook advertising, because that's about all I do for this. What advice would you give them as they are weighing this question of, is the cost of college worth it, or Do the cost really outweigh the benefits? And should students and their families really look at different options rather than the traditional, yes, I'm going to go to college, I'm going to pay for it all for 4 to 6 years and then see what happens? What advice would you give students as they're thinking through those possibilities?
So the first thing is do your research, which is, you work with debate students. I'm sure that is a given already, but really, there are a lot of things in life that are just kind of treated as assumptions.
You can never say do your research too many times. So please keep
trumpeting
that.
Do your research. it's an assumption that college will get you where you need to go. That if you go to college, you're setting yourself up for success. It's an assumption because culturally that has tended to be true. Historically that has tended to be true. But that does not mean that it is still the case. And I would first and foremost just emphasize, do your research, don't take my word for it either. I have some empirical evidence that I've given you. I have some statistics and some stories to back up my claims, but this is just my experience too. Take a look at the different trajectories that people follow when they go to college. Take a look at the numbers, take a look at the realities and the logistics of it, and the realities and the logistics of the other options too. And, I would give the same general advice that I give in a lot of my coaching, which is, work backwards. You figure out the correct trajectory by determining first and foremost where you want to end up. So what are your goals? What do you want to be building towards? What do you want to be creating? What do you want to be doing in 4 years, in 5 years, in 8 years, in 10 years? And then work backwards from there. And that will help you start to extrapolate which options do and don't make sense. And whether you're looking at this as a debate question, role-playing that and putting yourself in those shoes and seeing what doesn't make sense is going to help you better formulate your arguments that help you also better identify what questions are the right questions to be asking. But also as you're determining for yourself, you guys are young, you have the whole world in front of you. There are endless opportunities for what you can decide to pursue. Think about what's exciting to you and think about where you want to end up and then start taking a look at all of the options that exist and think about which one is actually the most efficient way of getting you where you want to go. Also, and this was the thing that finally pushed me over the edge of not going to college, and I've never looked back since. I've never regretted it for a moment, but college is always there too. You can make the wrong choice and turn around and go back and do the other thing. So the pressure isn't necessarily that high either, besides, maybe losing out on some time and obviously the financial burdens of the loans that you take out. But if you guess wrong, you might figure it out pretty quickly, and you can always turn around and do the other thing too.
Well, Hannah, those were some great bits of advice, and I think this has been a really helpful conversation. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us this evening on What's the Res? My guest this episode has been Hannah Frankman, Community Manager with Praxis. If you want to reach us with any questions, feel free to email us at whatsthereres@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram and on Twitter at whatsthereres_. My name is Josh Herring, and until the next episode of What's the Res, work hard, speak well, and seek truth.